I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. High school debating is serious business. For the Nationals, close to 100,000 students compete just for the privilege of a place in that tournament. And it's no longer a bunch of teenage boys in bad suits starting everything with "Be It Resolved." The National Forensic League's National Speech Tournament makes room for humor and drama and original speech, as well as the more classic debating. And one school consistently distinguishes itself as an unlikely power in high school debate. I say unlikely because James Logan High on the east side of San Francisco Bay is no fancy prep school. It's a tough urban high school with more than its share of kids at risk. It's the debate coach at Logan who consistently distinguishes himself for the persuasive power of his young debaters. In the past 8 years, he sent an impressive 49 of his students to that national tournament. And this year, Tommy Lindsay was rewarded for his efforts with a MacArthur Genius Grant. He is my guest this hour, and we'd like to have you join our conversation. What is it that debate, the power of a persuasive argument, can teach kids and adults alike? Are clear communication and self-expression forgotten skills? Are you or were you ever in a school debating program? Did it make a difference in your life? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And as I said, our guest this hour, Tommy Lindsay, debate coach at James Logan High School in Union City, California, where he teaches competitive speech and debate and oral interpretation. Welcome to The Connection, Tommy.
Thank you.
And I know it's a little late, but congratulations for the Genius Grant.
Thank you very much.
I'm interested in knowing, to start, what got you interested in the power of debate to begin with? Was it something that you heard or something that happened to you when you were a kid?
Well, actually, my start was not in debate. It was in persuasive speaking and original oratories and more of the individual events. I started when I was, I guess, in the ninth grade when I was asked to be a part of the graduation ceremonies for my high school, my junior high school. It was really interesting. You know, my teacher was not, you know, too encouraging, and she gave topics to the other students like graduation, what will you do in the future, and simple topics. And then she gave me mine, and it was investing in learning to cultivate the intellect. A friend of mine who I take care of now, who's 102 years old, helped me to kind of break down the topic, and we were able to come up with a speech, and it met great approval with my graduating class, and that inspired me to become a part of the speech and debate world, and it also allowed me to believe in that, you know, any student has the power to do this.
Can you help me with a definition just before we go on? You've spoken about persuasive speaking and speech, mm-hmm. and debate, and the word forensics comes up a lot when we talk about this. Is forensics the word that sort of best describes all the aspects of public speaking?
I think that is. I think earlier many people associated forensics with just debate, but now there are several events that are involved. There are the dramatic interps, the persuasive, the prepared events, the extemporaneous speaking, the unprepared events. And so there are a number of events that are under the umbrella of forensics. It's no longer just debate.
Tell me a little bit about the students who you have, who you're working with, who are on your team. Give me an example of someone who you think is an example of the kind of student who we wouldn't normally have thought would be part of a team like this.
Well, that's a great question. I have, you know, a number of students who you wouldn't think would be a part of this forensics world because, you know, you look at it's more of a preppy kind of activity. I have a student last year who traveled from, you know, Oakland legitimately into our district. He was an inter-district transfer. He competed for me for 4 years. And this kid gave up football because he knew that forensics would possibly be his only way out to college. The first year he competed, he didn't do as well. The second year, he was on the national stage. He did duo interpretation. Third year, he became the national champion, had an appearance on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And last year, he got accepted to Morehouse College. with a pretty decent scholarship. Wow.
What are you telling these kids, Tommy? What is it that you say to them when they come in, you know, from football practice and without the kind of speaking skills? How do you get them started?
Well, and I think a number of coaches are doing the same thing across the country. It's telling the kids that, you know, this is an invaluable skill. This is a skill that will be with you for the rest of your life. You may be involved in all of the extracurricular things, but when it comes down to speech, you're going to have to be able to present yourself. You're going to have to be able to be effective. And I tell my students that. Believe in that. Help you to get into college, and we'll move forward.
Now, when I was at school, one of the splits that existed was the jocks and then all the others. And there was no crossovers. But you're actually going after some of these kids who are athletes. I'm wondering how you, to be crass about it, make the sale to them that in fact, they're better off with something like this. I know it's a different version of the same question, but I kind of want to hear what you say to them.
Well, you know, your athletes are probably your better competitors, obviously, because they're in athletics. And I put the challenge to them, you know, that, you know, sometimes I don't believe you can do it. I don't believe that this activity is something you really can be involved in because there may be a fear factor. And then there's a challenge with them, and they say, oh, well, I think I can do this. And they begin to enjoy it. They win that first trophy. They learn about you know, team camaraderie, and it's kind of contagious. So once a kid is on the team, and it's very tough for them to kind of go back into other activities because they enjoy it so much. So I put the challenge out there for them.
Now we're talking about girls as well as boys. There's a reasonable mix of the two.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Because that in and of itself is something that's a bit unique of something at high school. These sorts of activities, anything that we talk about tends to attract, you know, more girls than guys. How do you keep that mix going?
Well, we have a pretty good balance on the team, and you know, I'm finding now, because I've been in teaching for so long, that siblings are coming into the program, and you know, the other day I just talked to a young lady who was in the sixth grade. Her brother's graduating this year, and she said, you know, I just can't wait to get on the forensics team. I go, you know, this is, you know, it's encouraging for me to know that it is making and having that impact with younger kids.
We're actually joined on the line by one of the graduates of the forensics team. Miriam Nalamansi is joining us on the line from just across the river here in Boston, where you're at Harvard. Is that right, Miriam?
Yes, that is right. Hi, Mr. Lindsay. How are you?
Hello, Miriam.
10 years since you were on the team, Miriam. I wonder if you look back over that period and say, you know what, it did help out.
Oh, man. I was a good student in high school, and I've done some wonderful things since. And if I was to say the one skill that has meant the most to me in my experience since, it has been what I learned from Mr. Lindsay through the Public Speaking Club. And so I am eternally grateful to that experience and to him.
Can you give us an example of where you actually use this skill now? Or where
Absolutely.
You have? Yeah.
Actually, I've used it probably in most of my activities since. And so when I graduated from high school, I went ahead to UCLA, and I ended up getting a great scholarship from UCLA, the primary reason being that in the competition, we had to present. And I knew that if that was one of the criteria, that I'd be in good shape. And so I ended up getting a great scholarship when I got there. A lot of the organizations that I joined, once they saw that I enjoyed speaking, that I was articulate, they used me in recruiting. And so I served the UCLA Alumni Association. I served a number of the student clubs that I worked with, in many cases being the first student to be asked to give keynote addresses and so on at big events. And once I went to work, again, they saw that I enjoyed speaking, that I was effective before crowds, and so they used me in their recruiting efforts and so on. And even recently now, I am VP of Training and Development for the Public Speaking Club here at school, and so I'm continuing on Mr. Lindsay's tradition.
That's not just school. That's the Harvard Business School, right?
Yes, sir, the Harvard Business School.
Okay, you got to answer a question for me, Miriam. What happened in that class at Logan? What's the what little button or switch or you know, magic dust did did Tommy Lindsay come up with that gave you the confidence that I can hear in your voice?
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, I mean, he just has amazing material. At the end of the day, to be able to teach a young child to get before an audience and come across as being confident, to be articulate, and to know that they can effectively represent themselves is an amazing thing. But maybe even more important than that is Mr. Lindsay has tremendous dedication to the team. I was telling somebody yesterday that he really is married to the kids. He's married to his program. It is the love of his life. And as a student working with him, you see that very clearly. And it's, you know, to have somebody care so much about your development and about your success, it really blows you away. And it makes you, you know, more than anything else, we've never wanted to disappoint Mr. Lindsay. And that drove us to work really hard and to be successful, both for ourselves but also for him.
Tommy Lindsay, I hope you're getting as much pleasure out of this as I am listening to Miriam.
Yeah, well, she's an exceptional young lady.
I wonder, Miriam. Sorry, go ahead, Tommy.
Yeah, I remember Miriam as a fresh woman. She started in the ninth grade, and she wanted to do an event that really didn't challenge her. And I said to her that, you know, Miriam, you know, you're much brighter than that. You're going to do extemporaneous speaking and Lincoln Douglas debate. And she felt as if that was, you know, too much work for her. Well, she went on to, in her sophomore year, to be on the final stage of Nationals, one of the top six competitors in the country in extemporaneous speaking. She went on to be Lincoln Douglas state champion, oratory state champion, national finalist in oratory, UCLA, Harvard, and who knows what the rest of her career is going to be like. She's an incredible young lady.
I wonder, Miriam, if you're speaking at Ernst & Young or Procter & Gamble or Harvard or wherever you're speaking, do you ever put Tommy Lindsay out there in the audience as a way of measuring yourself?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that, because a lot of times, you know, I am asked to either speak in an impromptu style or even some of the presentations that I give, and everyone is always very complimentary at the end, and I keep thinking, man, I'm so glad Mr. Lindsay wasn't here, because he would say that, you know, my posture wasn't right, or, you know, Mr. Lindsay is very loving. At the same time, he definitely, you know, holds you to a very high standard of excellence, and so a lot of times I think, you know, if I could do it again for Mr. Lindsay, I would be that much better and work that much harder.
Hey, Miriam, thanks for being with us.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care, Miriam.
Good
thanks.
To talk to you, Mr. Lindsay.
Miriam Nalamansi is joining us there on the line, where she is in her second year at Harvard Business School, Vice President of Training and Development for the Public Speaking Club there, and one of the many graduates of Tommy Lindsay's Forensics Club at Logan High in California. Tommy Lindsay is a winner of a MacArthur Genius Grant for his work with students at the high school level, teaching them debate, teaching them how to speak. Now, we'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-800-423-8255. Lots of us have experience with debating, with public speaking. What kind of a start did you get in that, and how much difference does it make when you're taking kids who are in 9th and 10th grade and giving them the confidence to stand up on stage? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. Just a few weeks back, Tommy Lindsay was awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant for his work teaching kids communication, persuasive reasoning. He's the debate coach at James Logan High School in Union City, California. He's my guest this hour, and we're talking about the work that he does and the difference that it makes. The number for you to join us is 1-800-423-8255. We'll take our first call from Charleston, South Carolina, and Michelle's with us. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there.
So, what do you think?
Well, I had a Mr. Lindsay in high school, and his name was Mr. Jameson. If he's listening, thank you ever so much. I was one of only two girls on the debate team, and it did for me what I think Mr. Lindsay may be doing for other kids. There's another part to it, which is that being able to hold your own in a debate is something that has only recently been open to women, and boy, is it a skill you can use.
Do you find that you use it in kind of your everyday, Michelle, or are you thinking about those few moments where you have to make a case for something in front of a group of people?
Both. But being able to spot and focus in on and respond to the fallacies, the weak points in other people's arguments pays off, whether you're, you know, dealing with your own life in a personal way, but also when people try to persuade you to do things that are stupid. And for teenagers, being able to take apart somebody else's argument about why you should do something that's really, really dumb, often kids don't have any skills to take those arguments apart, whether it's, you know, bad choices about sex or smoking cigarettes or knocking over a liquor store. You know, it's a great way to respond to that. I just wanted to say thank you to him for doing it, but also to add that in later life, what I found I needed was the ability to persuade and build consensus.
Let me, if I can, take the point that you were mentioning earlier, Michelle, about how it helps you think as a young person and as an adult. And I don't know whether or not, Tommy, you see that as a part of what you're doing as well.
Oh, definitely. It allows students to, you know, think quickly on their feet to make those kinds of decisions that have to be made. Because when you're given a position and you're in cross-X, you have better be able to think quickly on your feet, or else you lost the debate.
I was looking at the sort of a brief description of Logan High, and you know, 60 different countries, 30% of the kids, pretty brand new immigrants, a whole bunch of the students there who are at risk, either caring for themselves or at home with a single parent or looking after other siblings, and wondering to myself, do you turn that to their advantage? Do you say talk about what you know, or do you say come in, we're going to close the door, we're going to forget about everything that's out there and kind of live in our own little special world here?
Oh, no. I think it's very, very important for students to be able to express, take advantage of the diversity that we have on the team. We are probably the most diverse team in the country. And I think that's great for us and as well as other competitors that are in the National Forensics League, because they're able to have a good perspective of what goes on with others, what happens with other people, and how to live and get along with other people. It's really invaluable. And I never, when we do the dramatic interps, I never do things that are stereotypical, because I don't want to reinforce any stereotypes. I want kids to be able to take challenging pieces that will allow them to be proud of who and what they are. And I think that's really one of our strong points at Logan High School.
Let's bring in another call. This one from Cambridge. Fred's joining us on the line. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Dick. I thought you might enjoy hearing about Bush and Kerry's debate coach in college. I had the privilege of having the same gentleman. He was Professor Rollin G. Osterweiss. He was a history professor and also taught a course in the history of American oratory and, more important, coached the debate team. And Bush took his history of oratory course, and Kerry not only did that, he was also on the debate team.
And were you a debater as well, Fred?
I was captain of the Yale debate team and debated in high school in the 50s when the national programs for debate were just starting, coached by another history teacher, Jack Eady, in Minneapolis.
I'm wondering if you think of debate as something that changed your life.
Oh, there's no question. For example, Rollin Osterweiss used to say, every great speech, no matter how casual or how formal, has three major points, preceded by an introduction building rapport, and followed by a peroration or a conclusion, summarizing everything very quickly, hopefully with some emotion involved. And as I analyze it, I think Bush learned the lesson about rapport, and Kerry learned the lesson about three organized points.
I'm going to run that test by someone who is currently in the high school debating business. Justin Hinojosa is listening along on his cell phone, and Fred, he's one of the members of Tommy Lindsay's debate club. Justin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm wondering if you had a chance to watch the presidential debates this fall.
Yes, I did.
And what did you think?
Well, I think that, as Fred was pointing out, that it's very true that Bush was definitely striking more of a rapport with the American populace, whereas Senator Kerry was going definitely for more of a logical and argumentative nature in his speaking style.
Okay, be tough with me, though. Were either of them really good at what they were doing?
I was actually very disappointed in their debating style, in that it seemed more of a press conference than an actual adversarial debate. And I think that that was kind of detrimental to the voting process, in that the American people really didn't get to see any confrontation, more of a just restatement of issues. And that was really disappointing for me.
Justin, just stay with me. I want to check with the teacher here, Tommy Lindsay. Were you watching the debates as well?
I watched the first one, and I gave it more as an assignment to the students, because it was pretty clear that the format was, you know, going to be something that was not confrontational. And it would have been great to be able to have the cross-ex. It would have been great to see, you know, how these gentlemen, you know, spoke off the top of their head, you know. But those things didn't happen. And so I gave the assignment to the students.
What would have been different if those kind of rules had been lifted? Do you think it would have been better for the whole democratic process?
I think so. I think because it would have exposed a lot of weaknesses, because after the debates, there were fact checks that were done.
Right.
And we found that some of the things that were being said were, you know, not quite the truth. and that was really kind of scary, because it gave a horrible perception. And so my students were able to pick out some of those things. And I guess it worked towards Bush's advantage, I would think.
Hey, Justin, I want to come back to you. Are you off to Chicago this weekend for that big tournament?
Yes, I am.
There's a lot of pressure on you guys. I understand that Logan has won this tournament the last 3 years in a row, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
In the individual events.
Individual events, yeah?
Yeah.
And so, Justin, is there pressure?
I think there's a definite pressure. You always have to kind of try and live up to your reputation, and so that means that we're going to have to work a lot harder than maybe some of the other schools might have to, just to try and defend our title.
And is that okay with you?
I think definitely, and I think that one of the things that Mr. Lindsay has always pushed us to do is to rise to the level of expectations that people may have for us, or if people expect less from us, then always to disprove their underestimations of our strength in debate or IEs. And so I think that we're definitely prepared and definitely enthusiastic about competing and doing our best.
I wonder if you still get to bring a certain kind of underdog status to these kinds of competitions, Justin. I mean, you will go head-to-head with, you know, the students at expensive prep schools in Illinois and Connecticut, and that's not words that anybody would use to describe Logan.
Well, I think there is at least some level of an underdog mentality that we have, insofar as we don't have the same advantages that a lot of other students of other schools have. But at the same time, we've really become a powerhouse in speech and debate. And so it's kind of a dualistic nature that we have. On the one hand, we have a reputation to defend, and on the other hand, we don't have the same advantages that other people do. So I think we do tend to view ourselves often as underdogs, because we don't have those advantages and opportunities. But at the same time, we know that we're going to bring a level of competition that people don't always expect from us.
So, Tommy Lindsay, you're kind of teaching both things at the same time.
Sure. Where we fall short is our economics. I just think that financially, it's always a struggle, as you know, in public schools to be able to maintain the travel and to pay the fees and do those kinds of things. And that's a setback. A lot of students can't go to some of the camps that are offered during the summer.
Right.
But we try to make do, to use a phrase from my grandmother. We try to, you know, make do. And I think we do a pretty good job. For the last couple of years, we've been the number one school in the country so far as memberships and degrees are concerned.
I want to say thanks to Justin for being with us. Justin Hoza joining us there on the phone. He's currently one of the students on the debate team. And we're going to go to Spokane, Washington for our next call. Daniel's joining us from there. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, thanks.
Great. I want to make a comment and then a question. I'm currently a student teacher at Lewis and Clark High School here in Spokane and assistant coach of the forensics team. And first thing I wanted to comment on, you guys were talking before about how Mr. Lindsay was where he went to recruit his students, going after athletes and such.
Yeah.
Another thing I think forensics debate public speaking has done for high school students is the kids that are more on the periphery, kind of like not exactly the outcast students, but the students who don't quite fit in, and they get into debate. We kind of actively recruit kids like that. They've become some of our best speakers, and what's happened to them is they've gained extraordinary confidence in themselves, and you can really tell the difference between them from when you first saw them walking in the halls before they got into debate and the end of the year after they've had some success, and the way they walk in the halls, the way they carry themselves, the way they act in class. So one thing I think debate also does is really help kids just get a strong confidence in themselves, and their abilities. And the next question I had is following from that, once these kids do get a certain confidence, Mr. Lindsay, I think you can help attest to that with me, is that debater arrogance that's out there. And I was just wondering how you might deal with that. Your kids, kind of their heads get a little bit too big because they've had a lot of success.
Okay. you're absolutely right. The forensics activities do change the lives of a lot of kids. Some of the kids that are doing individual events who have been class cut-ups, I put them in humorous duo interpretations, and they've won national and state titles. So you're absolutely right. It's being able to channel that energy into a positive way, and you find that students usually respond because they're looking for something. The arrogance is just something I just don't tolerate on my team. I just believe that a person and a student needs to conduct and carry themselves in a very respectful way, not only to their teammates, but as to the adults especially. And traveling on the circuit, there are some things that students do that I would not allow to happen. A kid would be suspended from a couple of tournaments, maybe even taken off the team. We just don't tolerate that stuff.
You mean for jumping up and cheering when they win or doing the sort of high five thing?
It's more like how you treat your opponent.
Right.
How you respect your teammates. How you are responsive to the judges. Some students just don't have the type of respect that is needed in order to be a good all-around competitor.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Your chance to join my conversation this hour with Tommy Lindsay, debate coach at James Logan High School, also winner of one of this year's MacArthur Genius Grants. To Boston, Massachusetts next. Diane's with us. Hi, Diane.
Hi there.
So tell me what you're thinking.
Oh, well, I love this topic today, but I have to say that I was a debater at Firestone Senior High School in Akron, Ohio, and I was definitely no star, but we had a very good team in the 80s, and hands down, debating was, it was one of my top three most important formative intellectual experiences, and it served me well my entire life. I mean, it served me well in a job where I did quite a bit of public speaking, but also in grad school, interpreting and analyzing literary texts. And I think that the most important thing that I got from it, beyond sort of the personal poise, I'd gone from a student who couldn't raise her hand in class without her face turning bright red and just stuttering. Beyond the personal poise, it taught me how to structure my thoughts and how to communicate and how to analyze arguments. And I think that it's a skill that we really need to bring to bear in this society where there's so much of a need to be discerning citizens, discerning of the media, discerning of messages. And it really teaches you a respect for the facts and also an open-mindedness to consider various sides of an issue.
Diane, let me, if I can, just stop you there so I can go back to Tommy on this question of how you get that student, like Diane, to get over shyness. Shyness is such a big part of so many kids' high school experience. Is there a way of persuading them that they actually have something to say that people will want to listen to?
Sure. One of the important things is being able to have that kid to be in front of the class and provide the constant encouragement. We only take positive critiques. negative critiques just really demoralizes a person. And so we take the positive critiques. And you'd be surprised by kids watching other kids. They began to get that ability to be stronger and to be so have the confidence that it's amazing to watch. To watch a kid come into a program in the sophomore or the freshman year and to watch them leave in the senior year is unreal.
I mean, some high school students that I've met have, I mean, you could go the other extreme and say they have too much self-esteem. They have so much attitude that you almost can't get at them and get them to a stage where you know you can work with them. Is that also a problem?
Well, not with our program. We don't have so much of that. It's kids that have the support systems at home. They may appear to be that kind of student, but we don't have that kind of someone who's just overbearing. They usually mesh into our program pretty well.
And you get that mix, my producer was telling me, of kids from the remedial classes as well as some of the top students, and that doesn't even create a tension, you find.
Well, we not at all. In fact, there are a lot of our kids that who are in the honors classes. Forensics class is the only opportunity that they have to mix with kids of regular classes. And we have no problem. I think it's great for both set of kids. It allows an honors kid to, or an AP kid to be able to understand that, they have to work with people in the society, in the world, in the community. And it also gives the students, the regular students, a chance to be uplifted, to know that there's somebody that's out there that will, help them. If it's tutoring, going through some, a tutoring or whatever, it's a positive experience.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Your chance to join my conversation this hour with Tommy Lindsay, debate coach at James Logan High School, about the effects, the power of teaching people the power of the word. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, and if you are in any way persuaded by statistics, we'll try this set on for size. Logan High School students from Union City, California, 38% of the senior class goes on to college. But if you take a look at Tommy Lindsay's debating team, 90% of them go on to college. That's a fairly persuasive argument in favor of what it is that high school debating can do for a student's self-confidence and self-esteem and also chances at going on to college. It's one of the statistics, Tommy, I suppose, that you can use when you're talking to somebody on the basketball team or the football team.
Well, not only that, the statistic is really valuable when it comes down to trying to raise money as well. Just telling everyone that, it's a great opportunity for kids. A lot of and because of the diversity of our team, a lot of kids are getting opportunities that they wouldn't ordinarily get, and that's a great thing, to receive an academic scholarship, to be able to be just to cut above the rest is a great, great feeling for a lot of students. And there are a lot of coaches, and I would just ask your radio audience to be able to support, the National Forensics League. They do a tremendous job in policing this activity across the country. It's a great opportunity for students. If you have former debaters and former competitors out there, they ought to go back and judge a tournament. If they're working with companies, make the donation to try to keep the program going, because it impacted their lives, and I'm sure that it would help kids that are involved in this activity who may not be able to afford some of these things.
Do you mean, Tommy, that even with your record at Logan, I know that you were given a big award on the Oprah program earlier and the MacArthur Genius Grant on top of that you and your kids still have to struggle to get the money to go to tournaments to do the work that you need to do?
Well, not only that, we've been told that our budget has been cut back. I remind you, we're in public school.
I get that.
And it just, it saddens me to know that even this time next year, the program may not be in existence because we may not be able to have the funding. And so I have to go out and do the recruiting and do the fundraising and all of these things. It wears a person down. And that's why I want to thank publicly my ex-wife for doing a fabulous job, because this enters into the personal life. I know we don't have time for that, but she raised my kids, our kids. We have tremendous, just wonderful children. And it's because, I think a lot of times with all of the publicity and everything, that this gets lost in the mix. What about your family? Mm-hmm. And my ex-wife has done a superb job in making these my children whole individuals. And because a lot of times I was gone on the weekends, I was at the practices, and no one ever asked those questions. And so I wanted to, say this nationally. She's a wonderful person, and my kids are wonderful individuals.
You ever sit down and add up the hours that you put in as a teacher and as a debate coach?
Well, it's incredible. I go in the morning at about 8, and sometimes I don't get home until about 10:30, 11 o'clock, because there's so many things to do. You have to prepare for the secretarial work. You have to, deal with the kids who have their personal issues, and then you have to kind of take care of your schoolwork, the bureaucracy that you have to deal with, filling out forms and all of that stuff, and then doing the coaching in the classroom. So come to day's end, I'm pretty exhausted. I watch coaches over the country, some of the great coaches, the Bob Marks, the Randy McCutcheons, the David Dansky, the Lexi Greens, the Paul Belt, the Ted Belchers. Those are people that I've watched, and they are tremendous human beings, and I watch how they kind of manage their time and everything, but it's just unbelievable amount of time that is geared that this activity takes.
Yeah, well, it's no consolation for a broken marriage to be awarded a grant or a prize, but it is at least acknowledgement, and I think that we heard it in the voices of the students that we've had on the program so far about the difference that you have made in their lives. We are talking about debate with one of the top coaches in the country. Tommy Lindsay is his name. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to go to Louisville, Kentucky for our next call. Todd's with us on the line. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Interesting program. I had a question for your guest about the history and tradition of elocution as it was taught in public schools in the 19th, 20th centuries, particularly as it related to African-American speakers like Martin Luther King. And I'll take the answer off the air.
I know.
Can you elaborate just a little more on that for me, please?
Well, it's my understanding that elocution was taught particularly in African-American schools and segregated schools as a subject more and more, in the late 19th century and early 20th century, and that instruction and persuasive speaking helped people like Martin Luther King develop their speaking styles.
And the churches, too, I would imagine, played a big part in that.
That's sort of how I started with, just watching, the Baptist ministers and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Barbara Jordan and John Kennedy. These were the great orators, and I would watch that, I know a lot of my students that are persuasive speakers get an opportunity to watch these great orators, and I don't think that sometimes a lot of things are just not they come from within, and that's how it happened with me when I participated in the Rotary and Alliance Club contest. Watching and taking from that which came from within and using that in my persuasive speaking.
Louisville, Kentucky, and Robert's with us. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Question has to do with debating tricks. My younger brother was on a debate team in high school, and years later he admitted to using what he referred to as debating tricks, like citing statistics or some obscure reference.
You mean making up statistics?
Yes. that would often go unchallenged, and it kind of sounded like a lot of that was going on in the presidential debates. And I was wondering how much of that is taught or allowed under debating rules?
That's a good question.
None of it in our program. I don't believe in that.
How do you stop people from using those tricks, even if they're opponents, Tommy?
Well, you just try to rely on the judge to make, you know, an intelligent decision and say, you know, a lot of times the judge will have a chance to read an evidence card and say that this is actually the way that it is read as opposed to the interpretation that might be given by my opponent in the debate. You just can't. I know that some students give false cites for extemporaneous speaking, and it's just not ethical to do it, and we don't encourage it, and sooner or later those kids will be caught and they'll suffer the consequences.
1-800-423-8255. Where are we going next? To Cambridge. Jennifer's with us. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like to echo the discussion by today's guest and say that, like his students, I was considered an at-risk student. I was in foster care in rural Michigan when I was involved in debate. I was a policy debater, so I wasn't on the forensics team, and I wanted to mention that beyond the research skills and the general critical thinking skills that other callers have mentioned, that in rural Michigan, it's not very diverse in terms of the student population. So traveling to places in Michigan like Detroit really got us, well, I guess racial diversity was one of the benefits. And even when we were debating domestic topics like healthcare or the immigration topic, that it really changes your worldview. It offers a discussion of international topics.
Jennifer, where are you now? I mean, you say you were at risk. What are you doing now?
Well, because of debate, and I say this quite frankly, it was absolutely because of debate that I was interested in going to college, that I realized through going to debate camps that are hosted at colleges throughout the country that I ended up getting my BA, went to England for my master's, and I'm now getting my PhD at Harvard.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's absolutely, I mean, I know that other callers have mentioned how formative debate is, but I would say that it's absolutely formative, and unfortunately, like the guest, the program that I came out of has been completely abolished. It was on the chopping block well before any of the athletic programs, despite it being the most successful program, really, at Carroll High School in Michigan.
Jennifer, so, just I have one quick question before you go, yes. and that is, you talk about being in foster care in rural Michigan and making the shift into the debate club. Whatever made you make that shift? How did you ever go from what I can only assume was a position where you had low self-esteem or low self-confidence to doing something as public as debating?
Well, I was quite interested in reading, and I was, like other callers, quite shy. I wasn't very interested in the competitive aspect. I don't like to compete, but I do like to read. And so that was my, I guess, edge in. Additionally, it was something that, you know, nerds, unfortunately, kind of were steered towards, and I can't claim that I was very cool in high school, nor was I very athletic. So it was kind of a natural segue. But once you're in it, you get such, you know, if you're successful at all, it's such a positive format, because even though you might not be recognized in your local community, which most debaters aren't, that's why programs are often cut, you get a statewide recognition. And
Jennifer, let me just step in for half a second. I just want to hear from Tommy here, because Tommy, this is what you're all about. This is taking kids who need that leg up, and doing it with debate.
Yes, that's what I believe. I believe that every student, you have to, as a coach, find that goodness and that talent in every student. And some kids can't debate, and some kids won't make good debaters. But that's why they are able to go into a dramatic interp or a humorous interp or a persuasive speech. It's finding that, and I can, in about 3 minutes, I can assess where a student should be in the forensics program, and that's because of the years of experience.
All right, we're going to take a call from Hollis, New Hampshire, and Liz is joining us on the line. Hi, Liz.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
We have a son who's a freshman in high school and has just started debate, and he's actually going to Chicago on the weekend.
Uh-oh.
And we had no clue what debate was until he started getting into it. And he has become so driven and so focused since he started doing debate. It's really quite amazing.
You've seen a change in his personality or in his ability to express himself?
Well, he was always very good at expressing himself. That was one of the reasons why we looked into debate. But we never really found what lit his fire until now. And he's kind of just taken off, you know, running. I mean, the drive in him is just amazing. And he so wants to do better and better and better. And he's just loving it.
Well, tell him to watch out for the kids from Logan when he gets to Chicago.
I will, and I also just want to comment on the dedication of the coach, because the coach that we're involved in with is also utterly dedicated, and the amount of hours, I really don't think people who are not involved in debate realize what they put into it, and it's just mind-blowing. I mean, I am just bowled over with, you know, being swept up in this whole world of debate. It's just absolutely amazing.
I thank you for your call, Liz, and I second your comment on behalf of parents. I don't know if you hear it enough, Tommy, though, but those of us who send our kids to people like you do appreciate the time that you put in.
Well, I think it's interesting that we're trying this year. The national tournament is in Philadelphia, and they're having a tough time getting people to come and judge. And I would think, like a city like Philadelphia, you should be able to, you know, people should be coming out of woodwork to judge, to help, to be a part of this activity. And I truly encourage your audience to, you know, find a local tournament in your area, come and judge it. They will be inspired, and it'll be great for the kids.
And you've been an inspiration to us on the program today, Tommy. I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I hope that this activity begins to be recognized more, because a lot of kids, a lot of people, a lot of coaches all over the country put a lot of time and energy into this. And so thank you. Thank you very much.
Tommy Lindsay, debate coach at James Logan High School in Union City, California, recently recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant for his work to create new opportunities for kids at risk. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.